Well, thank you for inviting me back again. It's wonderful to be given the opportunity to preach to you. I wanted to talk today about what I've put down as my topic, which is Honest Doubt, which you might think is a bit of a weird title. But the reason I wanted to do this is because when I look at the story, and I have folded in the Road to Emmaus story because that's the reading for this week, but I got the order of service last week and said, oh, you didn't talk about Thomas, so I'll talk about Thomas. But then I realized that you did. It was a mistake. But both stories both deal with doubt, so I've sort of folded them in together. But when we come to this story of Thomas, I want to sort of fix or heal the poor label that he's been slapped with since the church began, because he's always known as Doubting Thomas. And I kind of feel bad for him, because Thomas was a great disciple. And in this story, I think he's probably one of the most real of the disciples, one of the most authentic. But to give you a bit of context of what's happening and where they're at. So this is, the disciples have locked themselves away into a room because they're frightened. And they're frightened is because Jesus has been crucified. They are now without their leader. They thought it didn't work, because when Jesus does appear to the disciples on the road to Emmaus, they say, we thought he was the Messiah. So they were doubting that it all fell apart. They're frightened that just because they were associated with Jesus, they too might get executed. Because remember, it was Peter who was pointed out of being knowing him because of his accent. They said, well, you come from the same area he comes from. So they've seen Jesus be falsely accused, arrested, whipped, beaten, and then crucified without cause. And so they're quite scared. They've locked themselves away because what if we're next? That's the idea. And the funny thing is that as I was going through this, I kind of thought that this sounds more familiar to us than when we first think. We too lock ourselves away. Maybe not with deadbolts like they did, but sometimes we lock ourselves away. We lock the doors to ourselves with cynicism, exhaustion, grief, or maybe even just the plain, I've been here before, I've been hurt before, and so I just shut that door. I do not let anybody else in. We say we're fine, while inside we're thinking, if this is all there is, I'm not sure that I can keep doing this. And what's quite beautiful is that in this moment, Jesus walks right into that space that they're in, that doubt that they have, that fear that they have. He walks straight into it. And he says this wonderful thing to them, which is peace. Peace to you. He says it twice. He says it three times all over in this whole reading, but to these disciples in this room at the moment, he comes into them, he says to them twice, peace be to you. And you think, why is that important? Well, because if you were one of the disciples, you might think, I abandoned him at the moment he needed me most. I doubted everything he ever told me in the last 3 years. So if he appears to me and he's fine, I'm going to cop it. Or I'm overcome with grief, I'm overcome with guilt and shame because I left you and all the rest of it. That will be the inner turmoil that they're going through. And so what he does is he walks into that and he says, peace be to you. It's the first thing he says to them. He doesn't say to them, where were you when this was happening? Why did you doubt? Or doesn't correct them. He doesn't rebuke them. He just walks into their pain, their fear, their uncertainty, their doubt, and he just says, peace. Shalom. The city's named Jerusalem. Peace to you. He says it twice because he knows they need to hear it more than once. Sometimes we need that. You don't need to tell someone that you love them once. You need to tell them multiple times. And then he does something astonishing. He shows them his wounds. He's doing this because he wants them to know that he's not a phantom. He's not a ghost. He's not a figment of their imagination who's just appeared. He's showing them the marks that he bears within his body. He's not appearing to them as the King of Kings or the Lord of Lords or the Glory in the Highest or any of this sort of stuff. He's showing them that he is the crucified one. One who was marked by love. When you think about the marks that he bears in his body from the crucifixion, which are always there, because when John looks into heaven in Revelation, he says, I see one upon the throne like a lamb who was freshly slain. So those marks are still there. Those marks represent love. The scars are not erased, they have been transformed. They become a sign that death did not have the last word. And so he comes to them and he shows himself to them as he is and brings peace to the situation. And then we get to the story of Thomas. Now Thomas he's not there when this happens. So the disciples come to him and they say, we saw the Lord. And Thomas says very honestly, look, unless I see him for myself, I don't believe you. Didn't want to get his hopes up again. Maybe you're just hysterical. Everything we went through was traumatic. But he says to them, unless I see and touch for myself, I will not believe. He's not being rebellious. He's not being a heathen or a heretic. He's being real. And what I love is that when Jesus comes into this situation now, he doesn't scold him. He doesn't say to him, not only did you doubt me, not only did you leave me, and not only now that you've heard witnesses about me, you still don't believe. He doesn't correct that theology. He says to Thomas, even after Thomas has just said this, peace be to you. And he calls him, come close to me, touch the wounds, and see for yourself. I love that little moment. That's the most precious moment for me in this whole exchange. When Christ says to a disciple who's doubting, a disciple who's depressed, a disciple who's discouraged, a disciple who's overwhelmed, come close to me and see for yourself. Jesus is not threatened by his question of doubt. He's not offended by it. What he does do is he meets Thomas exactly where he's at, where the doubt is the loudest. Because Thomas is just someone who's real and doesn't want to be hurt or disappointed again. And then he makes this great confession. He doesn't say to him, all right, you're alive. Thank God for that. He says, in awe, my Lord and my God. Now to us, that might not mean much, but to them, he's just called him the Adonai. It was a word, a title that they only ever used for the I Am. If they wanted to talk about God, the Jewish people, they would have to call God the Yahweh, the Adonai, the name above all names. That's what that means. So Thomas, after having this encounter with Christ, has turned to him and said to him, my Lord and my God. After he has this confession, Jesus looks sort of past him and sort of says to everybody, you see me and now you believe. But blessed are those who have not seen me and yet you believe. That's you and me. I wasn't in that room. I didn't see his wounds. I didn't touch his flesh. But Jesus has said to Thomas and to us is that you are more blessed because you do believe and you haven't seen this. You have in your own way, through your own faith, come close to him and seen him for yourself. In whatever way that has been. We see this as a love that is stronger than fear, a peace that makes no worldly sense, and a forgiveness that is received. That is the witness of someone who has encountered Christ. And we're blessed because of that. And then what Jesus does is he says to them, as the Father has sent me, so I send you. So not only are we comforted in our doubt or disbelief or in our turmoil, we also sent to then bring that peace, that hope, that love that is stronger than fear, that peace that makes no worldly sense to others. As the Father has sent me, I'm sending you. You're going out there like I was. You're like little me's, going out to the world and going out to everybody to bring that peace and that love to every situation that you can come. You can say to people, peace be to you. I think bishops do that in the Catholic Church. Every time they get up, they say, peace be to you. But that's what they're called to. The same breath that filled those frightened disciples now fills us to carry this forgiveness, this mercy, and this hope into a wounded world. We have met the risen Christ, and now we are sent to bear his peace. And then when you look at the story of the two disciples on the Emmaus Road, they are leaving Jerusalem going the wrong way. If you read the whole gospel is pointing to Jerusalem. That's their whole journey. They're going towards that. So now these two disciples on the road to Emmaus are going the other way now. And Jesus appears to them, and they don't know it's him. And he says to them, why are you so upset? What is it that you say amongst each other? And they turn to him and they say, are you the only person around here who didn't know what just happened? Did you not see the crucifixion? They go through the whole story of the crucifixion. And then he reveals himself to them. And then he gently takes them through all the scriptures, pointing out himself to them. They see the word within the words for the first time. He opens up their understanding. And what struck me about this was, are any of you familiar with the author C.S. Lewis? Can you put your hands up if you know C.S. Lewis? Okay, he wrote the Narnia stories. Yeah, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, those stories. Well, there's one of those volumes in that series is called The Horse and His Boy. And there's a scene in that story that really struck me. It's a character named Shasta who is wandering through a mountain in a fog, which is a stupid thing to do because you could fall, it's dumb. But he's depressed. He thinks he's the unluckiest person in the world because of all this turmoil and trial he's gone through. And as he is walking through this fog, he thinks he's alone. But then he realizes that there's another presence with him behind his left side. And he cannot put up with it any longer. So he turns to this presence and he says, who are you? And the presence says to him, I am the one who has waited a long time to hear you speak. Tell me your story. And so Shasta goes through this whole litany of, I was adopted by people who didn't love me. I was stuck in a graveyard and the only thing to keep me there comfort was a cat. I was pursued by jackals across the desert and I was stuck out to sea and then all this sort of stuff like that. What this voice says to him is that you were not alone. I have been with you the whole time. I was the cat that kept you comfort in the midst of that cemetery. I was the lion that chased away those jackals and drove you to safety. I was the hand that pushed the boat with the wind to get you out to sea. He just sort of says all this to him, and then he says to him, well, who are you? And this presence says, myself, myself, myself. And the fog lifts away. It's a play on the I am. Now, what really got me about this is that the disciples, Thomas, and the disciples on the road to Emmaus thought, well, he's dead. We're stuffed. We've got nowhere to go. But then they realize that the absence of God he's not been absent at all. The absence has been within them. He comes to them and he shows to them that in these all little moments, I've been there with you. I come to you and I say peace to you. I strengthen you. I tell you I love you. I show you the marks on my body. And it restores them. Mind you, their circumstance hasn't changed. They still could get captured and killed and all this sort of stuff. Doubting Thomas went to the mission field in India and was executed. He didn't doubt ever again. You know, that's his story. It's a shame that he's been slapped with the name Doubting Thomas when he went on to be a great missionary to the East. But as we look at this story and we look at these parts of doubt, is that we see that this is just them being incredibly honest. And what God does is that in that honesty, he meets them and speaks into it. I think what we get in these two stories is a gift. Because we have all been through a period of doubt. And if you haven't been, you will be. But you don't know what's happening. You feel like God is absent. And what's it all for? But then you'll look, as the voice said to this boy in that story, I was there when this and this and this. All those small acts of kindness. All those little moments of hope. All those times where you thought you were alone and you weren't. I was there that whole time. When we find ourselves in a locked room, or we're stuck in a fog, we speak into the silence and we hear him say, peace be with you. The Easter faith, which is the time we're in at the moment, is not a faith of pretending we have no fear, and it is not a faith of pretending that we have no doubt. It is our bringing of our fear and our doubt into a room to Jesus for him to say to us, peace be with you. Come close to me and see for yourself. It is allowing his presence to draw us to that same place that he drew Thomas to, and that we can in turn say, my Lord and my God. Amen.
Amen.